Swung on. There it goes deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a game-winning walk-off three-run home run. Gary Sanchez, the Sanchino, drills a long game-winning three-run home run in the bottom of the ninth, and the Yankees win the ball.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 97 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm once again joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod, or if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. We're back, baby. Baseball is back. It is so back, in fact. We already recorded an episode 97, but in classic Breaking Balls fashion, it was the day before they came to an agreement, so the episode was not really fit to print at that point.
I disagree. I have no standards, and I thought that we should have put it out, thoroughly embarrassed ourselves, been irrelevant for a week, but no. Emily wants to try and do well at this, I guess.
Well, I did love that when we first recorded, and at that point, we were very hopeless and had no idea that they were going to come to an agreement the very next day because it didn't seem that close. So I remember specifically saying to DJ Bingington, like, whatever, if they come to an agreement, we'll just release this. It's fine. And then when it actually happened, it was like, wait, actually, no, we can't release this.
Oh, no, I was part of that conversation. Like, we literally said, like, yeah, but I mean, like, what are you going to do? Like, it's fine. And no, it was not fine. It was hilariously out of date. But I mean, the bigger takeaway, everybody, is you're welcome. Clearly, the Breaking Balls curse worked its magic and brought back the sport for everybody. The sacrifices we make for our art, Emily, I swear.
And who knows, if it wasn't for our sacrifice there, would they have gotten the minimum salary up to $700K? I don't know. Would they have gotten the Universal DH, gotten rid of the Ghost Runner, and all the bullshit rules that we had since 2020? Who's to say?
This amateur baseball commentator says no.
Some other changes that are in the CBA that will be coming into effect in 2023 are larger bases by just 3 inches, and that's obviously not counting home plate, just first, second, and third. A pitch clock, and a ban on defensive shifts, which that one is pretty huge.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like, much like the DH, I kind of don't care anymore. You know, it's like, I used to have an opinion on it, and I honestly can't even tell you what it was. We can go back and listen and find out, but the big takeaway is like, okay, they all agree on this, like we can get baseball back, fine. It's not a game-ruining thing either way, like adding an extra player to the field or something like that. Like, it's not that big a deal. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it too. And especially because it's still like ignoring the elephant in the room, which both sides are. The side of the fans that are like, they should have to just adjust. And even the league banning the shift is that we're not going to see that much of a change because it has actually nothing to do with the batters per se or the defense. It has everything to do with how pitching is just dominating the game. That, yeah, are we going to get maybe one, maybe two hits a game at most? Sure. Is it going to be like this league-altering thing? I don't think so. People are going to be disappointed, I think. They're also expanding the playoff field to 12 teams. Now, John had to help me.
This is this year. This is happening immediately, right?
Immediately. This is happening this year. And John had to help me parse this one out because it's not confusing, but it low-key is kind of confusing. Because now, the third division winner, which is the division winner with the worst record of the division winners, basically becomes a wild card team because now they get thrown into that mix and they have to play the worst wild card team because now apparently there's 3 wild card teams that get a chance to play, right? Am I right about that?
I think so, but now that we're, of course, now that we're on the air, I'm getting confused about this because now I'm
because it's confusing.
Like, wait, so like the top team from each league gets a bye, right?
The so, 2 division winners with the best record.
Oh, the top
in
2
so, each league.
So 4 teams are going to get a bye.
Right.
This is so stupid. This is so fucking stupid.
Yes. And we now have this expanded playoff field to thank for the current situation that is happening in the league as far as free agency is concerned and the moves that certain teams are making is because it's obvious that there's not really that much of an incentive to win the division anymore. And as long as you have one of like the four best records in the fucking league, then you make it to the playoffs and then it's a crapshoot.
It's the only way that I can justify the Rockies going after Chris Bryant. It's like, hey, you never know. We could wind up the sixth best team of the NL one year and make a first round exit and this will all be worth it.
I don't even know where to begin with that acquisition. First of all, they got rid of Nolan Arenado, their homegrown stud of a third baseman last year, much to the chagrin of many Rockies fans, only to sign another third baseman that's like the same age to a long-term deal that is $26 million AAV. Like, what the fuck is going on over there? Rocky Mountain High or what?
Yeah, right. Unless they're just about to get serious and like they're going to re-sign Story and like, well, no, but there's no pitchers left. Like, who else are they going to sign?
And that is a great point. Actually, bring up Trevor Story, whose name has like barely been mentioned since the lockout ended and the quote unquote free agent frenzy that we were promised that has been like not a frenzy at all.
I was
going to
say, side note, how fucking funny was that? It's like, it's going to be like 24 hours like you've never seen. And all the teams are like, well, we don't want to appear like we're tampering, so we're going to wait. Like, okay, this was boring.
My favorite thing about like the we're going to pretend that we weren't tampering is the Matt Olson trade. So the A's make that huge trade with Olson to the Braves, and they took basically every single one of the Braves' top prospects for it. And then literally within 24 hours, Olson signs a mega extension with them. So it's like, oh, okay, this just happened over the course of the last 24 hours. You guys weren't talking at all in the last right. few weeks. This guy just agreed to do this. Now the rest of his career is going to be in Atlanta.
Well, didn't like they that? Also say that he just bought a house in Atlanta like a couple months ago? Now, I know he's from the area, so you could write it off as that, but...
I don't know, Ron. That sounds kind of crazy.
I don't know, Ron. It sounds kind of crazy.
And we're getting ahead of ourselves here because the Yankees actually made a few moves and they were surprising.
I'm sorry to interrupt. What's funny is like the free agent frenzy never happened, but because we scrapped last week's episode and we've had a full week for stuff to accumulate, we are now about to go into the free agent frenzy portion of the podcast.
We are delivering the frenzy that was promised. So the Yankees, I mean, the moves were surprising in that I had foolishly gotten myself excited at the prospect of actually getting like a big name shortstop, but totally unsurprising if you look at how the Yankees have handled most off seasons. And obviously they got Cole in 2019. They brought in Stanton in December of 2017, but it's now 2022. Like those years are firmly behind us. I don't really consider that as like as recent in terms of like big deals happening, especially for the Yankees.
It's pre-pandemic. Nothing about pre-pandemic feels recent.
Thank you. So I'm not going to lie. I was totally lulled into a false sense of security because one of the first moves made after the lockout ended was the Cubs signing Andrelton Simmons to a one-year, $4 million deal. I'd never been happier to see a player sign with another team that's not the Yankees. DJ Binghamton and I literally like high-fived when it happened because that was one stopgap off the table. We were psyched, thinking one step closer to Story or Correa. And then a day later, the Rangers traded their shortstop, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who was the next stopgap that was being rumored for the Yankees, to the Twins. Once again, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening, blah, blah, blah. And then 36 hours later, he and Josh Donaldson...
Oh, something was happening.
Dude, like, I should have seen it coming. I should have known. And I feel like part of me, when I tweeted, like, oh, one more off the board, that, like, this is going to come back to bite me in the ass. And it did.
That's some bad juju. You set yourself up for it.
When it didn't happen with Simmons, I think that it lulled me into a double false sense of security again. And I was like, I can tweet. This is going to be fine.
Sleep at the wheel.
So... at first glance, I was upset by this trade just because it's not a sexy move.
But at second glance, I was upset by this trade because it's not a sexy move.
So,
but at third glance, no.
Now, I went through all the stages of grief with this one, but the reality is the team is better for it. So they traded Donaldson, Kiner-Falefa, and catcher Ben Rortvedt in exchange for Gary Sanchez and Gio Urshela, who... sad to see them go. I really would have loved to have seen Gary, you know, break out and be the player that everyone was hoping he was going to be, that we saw flashes of. Didn't happen here. I'm hoping that maybe a release of some pressure going to fucking Minnesota from New York City, maybe he'll find his stride. I don't know.
I'm going to refrain from making the obvious fat joke about being in the upper Midwest now. Okay. sorry.
Rude.
Oh, I had something to add, but I you know what? I don't regret it at all. I went for the joke and I lost the thought that I had. no, but it's one of those things where it's like, you're right. When you really think about it, it's not necessarily a bad offseason and a bad move, but there's also, like you said, there's that layer of, because you have to say it that way, it still doesn't feel right. You know what I mean? It's like, it should just be like, oh, what an obviously great offseason, versus like, well, technically, let me push up my glasses here. If you look at all the numbers, it's like, well, you shouldn't have to do all that, right? It's just be like, oh, yo, we got A, B, and C. What an offseason. And again, not for nothing, like, you guys are the New York Yankees of baseball. I think that's a fair analogy, right?
Yes, I'd say so.
But so it's one of those things where it's like, because you're the Yankees, it's just not splashy. And it's almost maybe a little unfair, but it inherently seems not like a bad offseason, but just not what you were expecting, and somewhat disappointing because of that.
And like Ryan Garcia at Ryan Garcia ESM on Twitter, he's one of the people that's kind of helped me get to this point with that move. Not too long after the trade happened, he made the point that, you know, the Yankees have added 7.8 projected WAR and lost 3.2 projected WAR for a net WAR of 4.6. So as far as projections go, the team has gotten better. The defense has tightened up, and I know Gio can be a defensive wizard at times, but Kiner Falefa is elite defensively. His bat, he's like an old school shortstop where his offense is just not good, for lack of a better term.
I was going to say, if you miss Phil Rizzo, well, let me tell you.
And it is kind of cute. So I was like kind of popping off and upset about it. But then he was so excited, this guy. I mean, he posted a video of like him shaving his beard, huge smile afterwards. And he posted a picture of he and his dad in the bleachers at Old Yankee Stadium. Like, so that kind of thing is always great. It's great fan service. And I really appreciate him doing that, because it's like, I'm sure he knew that there was some disappointment around his acquisition, and not about him per se, just about what it meant for the team's moves moving forward and their future.
Yes, but I feel like the disappointment wasn't complete yet, because it's true though, because there was still that undercurrent of like, all right, well, what about first base? Like, we're going to get like Freeman now, right? And then Atlanta makes the move. It's like, okay, Freeman's moving somewhere. And then you re-signed Rizzo. It's like, okay. And again, it's one of those moves where it's like, it's not, Anthony Rizzo is a great baseball player. Like, it's right. Not a bad move. You guys don't suddenly suck because he's your first baseman. And again, almost unfairly, but when you're comparing it to having, you know, Matt Olson or a Freddie Freeman, it's just not sexy.
And at this point, I mean, and I kind of felt bad because I was so psyched when they brought in Rizzo during the All-Star break right before the trade deadline last year. And I even, at the end of the season, I even wanted him to come back. Now that I'm a day away from that move, I'm not pissed that he's back. I would prefer Rizzo over Voit, I think.
100%.
If for no other reason than just a lefty bat in the lineup. But a lot changes in over the course of this winter. And I know nothing really happened because of the lockout. But as far as like what I expect from the team and what I expect from the front office, it made this Rizzo trade like a fucking wet blanket. Even though last year I was psyched to have him traded here, but the circumstances were different. There was more options now than there were on fucking July 30th in the middle of the season.
And I feel like it begs the question, like, whose fault is that disappointment at the end of the day? Is it kind of the fans' own fault for whipping themselves up into a frenzy and creating these expectations, which at the time might seem realistic, but then when it doesn't happen, it's like, well, the Yankees never told you they were going for those players. You know what I mean? Like, there's been reports that they were in on them and stuff, but you know, I mean, not you specifically, the royal you kind of set yourselves up for disappointment with those lofty expectations. But the flip side of that is you're the goddamn New York Yankees. So what are you supposed to expect?
I was just going to say that the Yankees and all of their like the tradition and the championships that are shoved down the fans and the rest of the league's throat and all of the pomp and circumstance that come with the Yankees has a lot to do with the fact that their mantra has been like, win at all costs. So don't give me the, we're Yankees, we shave our faces here, we're all business here. Don't give me all that Yankee bullshit and then have Hal on the TV today saying that, oh, well, the last 2 years have been tough financially for the team. Give me a fucking break.
The press release for the Kiner, Falefa, and Donaldson trade also includes video of the last game of the 2009 World Series.
Don't you remember this? This was great. So I hope they're not done. There's, of course, it's tough. The thing that sucks about trying to follow the Yankees offseason is the fact that the Yankees are rumored to be in on every trade, every free agent, whether it's real or not, because it's used for leverage. So as the team stands now, it is a different team than last year. You know, getting a sexy free agent isn't what would make this team different, because a lot of people are like, it's the same team. It is not. The infield's going to look very different. I'm excited for that. And I'm hoping they're not done, because the A's are having a full-blown fire sale, and I'm hoping that they're going to move Manea and Montas, who apparently is one of the best pitchers in the league.
And that's also, like, big picture. How funny is it, like, the owners spend all these months posturing about, like, oh, you know, competitive integrity, blah, blah, blah. And they cannot, the A's and the Reds cannot tear it down fast enough as soon as an agreement is signed.
And to bring it back to the agreement, I love right before one of the, you know, the things that the owners would throw in at like the last second for some of these agreements when they would submit a proposal to the union. And one of the proposals was like, we will submit this proposal and we will only agree if the union agrees to drop the lawsuit against four of the teams for misappropriating their revenue share. So I love on one hand, it's like, we care about competitive integrity, but then they're like, please let these teams off the hook for not caring about competitive integrity whatsoever. And speaking of that fire sale, the Blue Jays traded Matt Chapman, who of course the Yankees were also rumored to be in on, but Donaldson kind of squashed that rumor. He's now a Blue Jay, and I saw a shitload of Yankee fans really trying to convince themselves that Matt Chapman actually is league average player. And like, sure, his weighted runs created is trending down, but he's still an above average hitter, and he is easily the best defensive third baseman in the league.
Blue Jays are going to be annoying for you guys this year.
Dude, this fucking division is going to give me agita if, like, well, and by too, April, I feel like.
Because you know, knowing our luck, that Correa and Freeman are going to have destinations by the time this episode drops. And yes, two of the more hysterical rumors I've heard are Correa to the Orioles and Freeman to the Rays. Can you imagine that AL East? My goodness.
And has Freeman at this point, have he and his agency kind of overplayed their hand? Because now, like, if they accept a deal from the Rays famously don't like to spend that much money. So I can't see him really signing some fucking blockbuster deal with them. So it's like, if that's all he has left, his agency really fucked his free agency up. You know what I mean? Like, they are turning down deals.
Right. Coming off of a World Series championship as the first baseman, like, you have all the leverage in the world, dude. But it still ultimately is more of an indictment on the Braves than anything else. Like, maybe the most obvious move for any team was for the Braves to re-sign Freeman. Like, face of your franchise, and you know, you don't have to. They sold the farm for Olson instead. And it's like, well, what are you guys doing? Like, just pay him. It's crazy.
And what's also crazy is, how the fuck are the Braves getting all of these elite players to sign these obscene deals in arbitration years that, like, are going to turn out to be terrible for the player, but amazing for the organization? I mean, Albies, Acuna, and now Olson are going to be making hilariously low compared to what their caliber player is going to be making once those players in that class hits free agency in a few years.
Yeah, I don't get it, and I'm not interested in trying to figure out a way to justify the Braves' behavior. I'd rather condemn it and move on. So I'm going to do that to the Mets more specifically, who have not had a bad offseason.
Oh, God.
So the big one, the Mets needed to shore up their rotation, and they did so. Speaking of that Oakland fire sale, we got Chris Bassitt for two pitching prospects, which, I mean, you know me, I'm not a prospect hugger, so totally fine with that. Bassitt's going to slot in nicely as a number three starter. Dude was an all-star last year. I'm thrilled. I could not be happier about this. I wanted to get that out of the way, because then we also got Adam Ottavino, which is
Okay, fine.
And then we
signed Enjoy that one.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. You know, I'm just glad that Stroman's number zero will be repurposed immediately. So that's nice, I guess. And we got Chasen Shreve on a minor league deal. Okay, whatever. What I'm excited about, so One thing we didn't go into specifics about was what they wound up doing with the luxury tax in the CBA. So for 2022, the luxury tax, or the CBT threshold, is $230 million. And then every $20 million, $250, $270, and $290 is an additional tier where the percentage of the penalty goes up. So the highest one, that $290 mark, has been nicknamed the Steve Cohen tax because it's... It's a short list of guys who are going to approach that. Steve Cohen, maybe the Dodgers. That's really it. So they asked Uncle Stevie, like, hey, so are you going to be going over your namesake tax? And he just goes, yeah, probably. I love that shit, man. I love that. Just so casual. Like, oh, $290 million. And oh, what's the penalty? $45 million? Yeah, okay. Fine. Sure. No problem.
And on one hand, as a Yankees fan, it sucks to have the Mets be the team that's now the Yankees of old in terms of just like, yeah, I'll spend whatever money I have to put a winner on the field. But on the other hand, I'm kind of happy it is because it's right in this media market. It is right in the Steinbrenner's face. Like, oh yeah, you don't want to spend, you're going to pinch pennies and talk about being poor.
It makes them look bad in the best possible way for the good, you know, for the good of the players in the sport.
Without question. And I, for one, am looking forward to seeing Adam Ottavino. Sorry, because now I'm a bitter Yankee fan.
Okay,
now I have to bring him back to Ottavino. The NL East has possibly some of the heaviest hitting lefties in the whole fucking league in it. I mean, now they have Olsen, Harper,
Schwarber on the Phillies now. Yep.
Soto, and Adam Ottavino loves giving up dingers to lefties. So I hope for the Mets' sake they go out and get a lefty out of the pen, because I think that they only have like two lefty pitchers in the entire pitching staff.
It's a very righty-heavy rotation in bullpen. Yeah, 100%.
And granted, there are a shitload of free agents left on the market. I don't have the list of free agents in front of me, but I have to assume there's at least one serviceable lefty that the Mets can go out and get.
Now, before we wrap up by going down the list of the transactions, just briefly, because we bring them up at any opportunity. So DeGrom... any excuse, right? This is me after Pete Alonso survived a car accident.
Oh my
I want
God.
To talk about DeGrom. Yeah, he's fine. Don't worry. He's
that car was fucked up, though. He had to kick out
the
windshield.
Did you see that picture, man? Oh my God. Brutal. Yeah, apparently he got T-boned and flipped three times, and he thanked the good people at Ford. That was very nice of him.
Aww.
Yeah. But anyway, so just briefly, DeGrom said that he will be exercising his opt-out after the season and test free agency. But along with that, saying that, you know, he would like to remain a Met for life. Now, if this was still the Wilpon regime, this statement would terrify me. Being that yes, it's no longer the Wilpon regime and we got Uncle Stevie in the driver's seat, I have no problem with this whatsoever. Because you know what? Quite frankly, the contract that he's on right now is grossly underpaying him as the best pitcher in baseball. So you know what? Go get paid. Uncle Stevie's going to back up the Brinks truck for you, buddy. Like, go do it. Go have a great year. Be healthy. Pitch your brains out. And then get paid. I love it.
And I love that kind of transparency because this is a business. This is what these guys do. The opt-outs are built into contracts for a reason, specifically for situations like this, where it's not so much about a player being unhappy per se. It's more about, okay, I've performed or overperformed, so now let's renegotiate my contract.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it can be interpreted by fans as a, fuck this team, I'm opting out.
Right.
Where it, when it's dropped on them, because a lot of casual fans, they may not necessarily know the ins and outs of a player's contract. So all of a sudden, at the end of the season, the Mets lose, then, or win, for that matter. And then
DeGrom,
times have changed. And then DeGrom opts out, and then you have a bunch of Mets fans that are upset, where it's like, hey, I'm going to do this. So prepare yourselves. It has nothing to do with my want to be a Met. It has everything to do with my want to make more money.
And I love that. It's not hanging over their heads the whole season. They know what the deal is. And again, I think it helps too that, you know, he's recognized by everyone as the best pitcher in baseball. So we know there's no argument as to whether or not he has that kind of leverage, and no argument to like, well, should they pay him? Yes, you got to pay the best pitcher in baseball.
And something that was really cute was Scherzer was asked, you know, about like whether he or DeGrom is the number one pitcher. And Scherzer was like, Jake is the number one pitcher. I'm here to support him. I'm here for him. And I love that kind of unity. I mean, obviously, like, what else is he going to say? You know, what is he going to be like?
Right.
No, he's not. I am. But I just really love that sort of unity. It's such a sweet thing. And even though DeGrom is in his 30s, Scherzer is significantly older than him in baseball years. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, you are on the back end of your career.
Yeah.
And this guy's still in his prime. So support him.
I'm so glad I get to root for Scherzer for a change. All right. So speaking of fire sales, you want to do a quick fire sale of all the transactions that went down that we haven't talked about yet?
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
All right, so we got Carlos Rodon signed with the Giants. Okay. Andrew McCutchen.
Like, line.
Opinions? No, nothing? Okay, great. Andrew McCutchen went to the Brewers. Oh, I liked Kutch. That's a shame. Jesse Winker, as part of that Reds tearing themselves down, he's now with Seattle. Great pickup for them. Jairus Familia and Brad Hand are now on the Phillies, which is, you know, I don't want to laugh too soon because I'm sure that he's going to do well now. let's see what else we got.
Sonny Gray went to the Twins, so now he is back right. Trying to avoid Gary Sanchez as his catcher. He's going to have to ask for another personal catcher. And real quick, his son, who's 7 years old, this is Sonny Gray, his son Gunnar is now a huge Reds fan because his dad has been on the Reds for the majority of his life. And he was really, really upset that he was traded to the Twins. So Sonny Gray on the flight to Minnesota showed his son the Little Big League movie because like the little kid is like the manager of the Twins in that movie.
Aw. Let's see what else. We had Japanese player Seiya, however you pronounce it, Suzuki, wound up with the Cubs. Fernando Tatis wound up with the DL after breaking his wrist in a motorcycle accident.
I loved in the press conference, someone was like, So Tatis, about the motorcycle accident. And he said, which one? Like, what the fuck, bro?
Is the Padres PR team, like, still locked out? Like, what happened? Oh, and just to wrap everything else up, on the biggest news day of his life, Jeff Passan got hacked by Crypto Bros.
I didn't know
any other way to wrap that up. That's just too funny not to mention.
And it happened literally, like, was it right before the lockout ended news or right after it?
No, like, right, like, hours before. He just got his account back in time to be part of the announcement, but it was really like, you know, we're coming down to the wire, like things are coming together, and then suddenly he's got a monkey in his profile picture, and he's retweeting all these NFT things, like, oh my god.
So needless to say, there was no free agent frenzy like we were promised, but we're in a frenzy of excitement over here. The season is in full swing, they're going to play a full 162 games, shortened spring training, I mean, this is more than I could have hoped for, and this is more than I was hoping for, so here's to a amazing season and another full season with Breaking Balls.
And with that, let's get right into the voicemails.
Our first voicemail is from our famed stat and pitching guru, Max Greenfield, who is the current pitching coach for the Santa Barbara City College. And we get to hear from Max every now and then. He was on the show a few times, and now he's super busy with his new job. So it's always a pleasure to have him call in.
He's the only one that gets a 5-minute voicemail. Just want to be the one to say that. I'll throw myself under the bus. This is a Max specialty and a Max privilege.
Hey, Breaking Balls crew. This is the former stat guru, stat genius, pitching, you know, still a pitching coach. Come on in, Max Greenfield. Just had a few things that I want to get off my chest about how this sort of opening spring training, you know, arb deal and all this stuff is sort of going. I thought after the CBA had been ratified, I thought it was a pretty good deal for the players. Like, overall, I thought it was fine. You know, I thought they got some stuff that they clearly wanted and it was a big win for them and everything. But everything that since the lockout has ended, I don't know how you don't see it as just a massive loss for the players. It just, the deals that are happening, the fact that guys are not getting the contracts that they expected, or you know, it's taking a while to get those contracts, is just maddening. You know, starting with Atlanta, you know, they had their face of the franchise available in the market, and instead of just paying him what he's worth, they decided to trade half the value of their farm system to, you know, Oakland to get Matt Olson. And, you know, Matt Olson is a great player, arguably just as good as Freddie Freeman. You know, he's a lot younger in a baseball sense. Like, I can completely understand. But I don't know how you don't look at the fact that they just won a World Series, set a record in profit, and then they go trade for a guy who is going to be significantly cheaper. And then they gave him a bargain and a half extension, something that Atlanta is notorious for doing. That, you know, they did it to all three of their best players now, in Olson, Acuna, and Albies. Like, and they'll probably do it to Austin Riley as well. If they haven't already, they might have. I can't remember. But, you know, like, again, I don't see how you don't think that's just a massive loss for the players. These arbitration, pre-arb, all these extensions, I mean, $21 million average annual value for Matt Olson. That's just, it's going to age so poorly for Matt Olson. And listen, $168 million, that's nothing to sneeze at. Like, that's a lot of money. Good for him. But at the same time, that's a whole bargain and a half. It's just, I don't get how that's just not frustrating if you're a player or somebody who, like, works in the union. And then I don't get how it's not frustrating, you know, obviously anything can change. The Yankees can still sign Trevor Story for Carlos Correa, but their offseason has been abysmal. And the fact that they are not willing to spend on the big-name free agents, again, I don't see how you don't... First of all, I don't see how, as a Yankee fan, that's not a abysmal offseason or a dramatic loss for the player. The most valuable franchise in the sport is refusing to just spend money on the big-name free agents. And listen, Josh Donaldson's a great player, and I actually think he helps the team a lot because he's still a solid defender at third base and is a good hitter who doesn't hit the ball on the ground, which they so desperately need, right? They need to play third base. But if Isaiah Kiner-Falefa was, you know, their utility man, then that's fine. Like, that's a pretty good get. You know, he's a good utility guy, can play the role that DJ LeMahieu was supposed to have. But the fact is that, like, he's probably going to be their starting shortstop because Hal Steinbrenner just doesn't want to spend on Carlos Correa or Trevor Story. And that's, again, I don't see how that's just not completely aggravating for the players and for Yankee fans. Like, it's just, I don't see how this is anything other than abysmal. Again, things can change and all that stuff, right? But, like, it's been over a week and we still haven't had Freddie Freeman sign. Carlos Correa still hasn't signed. Like, I feel that is a reflection of all these activities post-CBA. You know, that's really all I had to say. It's definitely frustrating right now. You know, maybe I'm wrong and it changes and stuff and it gets better, but not feeling too good about that. Hope you guys are doing well. Glad to hear you guys got over COVID and everything. That was all good. Still listening every week. Have a great rest of your week, guys. I'll listen in. Hear your thoughts, as always.
Yeah, Max, I mean, I totally agree. Like I mentioned earlier, I've kind of come around on it because I have no choice to. I mean, I'm certainly not going to not watch. So I'm going to cheer for the Yankees. I'm going to cheer for Donaldson and Kiner-Falefa and anyone else who they get. But even though I know that it does make the team better slightly, but better is better, it's still not a sexy move. And this is an entertainment product. Like, I still remember where I was and what I was doing when the news broke that they signed Cole, when the news broke that they traded for Stanton, because those were huge moves and it was exciting and it was like a shot in the arm to the fans, like, hey, like, we're now ready. We're coming into another window and we're getting these pieces to try to complement guys like Judge and Gary Sanchez and so on and so forth. Some of those guys haven't worked out. They're apparently working on an extension with Judge, which hopefully comes before opening day. But these moves don't tell me that we're still in a window. And I'm sure I have the 12-team playoff to thank a lot for that. But if all of this has made anything clear, it's just that there's still collusion going on between the owners, which is like the hugest elephant in the fucking room. And I don't really know how they can possibly stop that.
Abysmal. I got nothing else to add. I said disappointing. I think abysmal is even better, though.
And I gotta wonder if the Braves handle Freeman's free agency in the same manner if they don't win the World Series last year, because I feel like it's a lot easier for their fans to swallow this move because the World Series title superseded Freddie Freeman in their eyes as, like, this is what's most important. So now they're on some... Who am I to question the moves of our GM? Because look what he just brought us last year. So as opposed to if they hadn't won shit since 95, then Freeman is a lot more important to the psyche of the fans and or franchise than he is at this point in time.
And, you know, I mean, in the bigger picture that Max was talking about, it's kind of like I said earlier, it's truly hysterical how they spent all these months, you know, essentially trying to lowball the players, and then they finally come to an agreement that's, again, not perfect, but acceptable enough for both sides to get it done. And it's almost like in that afterglow of, like, oh, we got baseball back, we kind of lose sight of, like, these negotiations were the owners lowballing these guys for months. So, yes, of course they're going to be lowballing them once the contracts start rolling in. Like, it was all... it's a shame, but like I can't say I'm surprised. You know what I mean? And that really sucks. And what started out is like, oh, it's going to be free agent frenzy. Oh, wait, no, nobody wants to admit that they're tampering. It's like, no. What all that really is they're all trying to lowball as much as possible until somebody says yes, which is what the lockout was. It's all the same bullshit. And I fear that we have no reason to believe we're not about to go through this whole thing again in 5 years.
All of this proves how right we were and many other people were that no matter what deal ended up being made between the union and the league came out with the big fat W.
Yep.
And that's what we're seeing here. Sure, there are some changes that are better for the players, raise minimum salary, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, they still have control of these guys for a long time once they enter the league. And that is something that incentivizes guys like Albies, guys like Olsen, and guys like Acuna to sign these low ball extensions when they're 22 years old, because hey, anything can happen between now and when you reach free agency. Are you willing to take that risk? And look at what's happening on the open market. You may not even get what you think you're going to get, so you might as well sign this extension now.
Well, really, it's the player's fault, though, if you think about it. Because if they had only thought ahead and wound up in the top two rookie of the year voting, they'd have a whole extra year of service time given to them. It's not my fault they decided not to do that.
That is a really crazy addition. Right? Yeah, and I guess it makes sense.
That's a lot. Like, that's a huge reward.
It is. And, hey, they should get that reward, because until now, it's just been like, here's a plaque, good job, because they don't have any contracts. They don't have any incentives in their contracts like players will have with MVP awards, Cy Young. So at least they get something, but, like, give them money instead. And I get this gets them closer to money, but still.
Well, that was like when Pete Alonso won the home run derby. It was more than he made as a player that whole season. He got $1 million. He was like, I'm not making $1 million for the season.
Max, thank you so much for your call and your thoughts. Good luck this season.
Great to hear from you, man.
Our next call is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. I got to thank you guys. I know you guys have been through a lot with the breaking balls curse, but bringing back baseball on this lovely Thursday evening, thank you. I got to say, I really appreciate it. Yeah, so I imagine there's probably going to be about 15 free agent signings before I'm done with this call. But, yeah, it's kind of crazy because last week they passed the deadline to have all 162 games played, and that deadline went after the owners tried to throw a bunch of garbage in there at the last second at 2 in the morning. The first week of the season got canceled, and then they missed the second deadline, so the second week of the season got canceled. And then a day later, they got the deal done, and they're playing all 162 games. So, yeah, Manfred and the owners, they put on a big show, tried to get the players to flinch. It didn't work, and I'm happy for that.
For everyone listening at home, Quinn's call was literally on the day that the lockout ended. So, no, we now know that there were no free agent signings within 15 seconds of that call. It came pretty slowly, a lot slowly than we were anticipating. And I mean, what can I say? Breaking balls saved baseball. And I feel confident in saying that. And also in saying that all of the theatrics were just for pressure on the union from the league. And the union knew that they were going to play a full 162. And that's why they didn't flinch.
Although, to play devil's advocate, if not for all those performative theatrics, what the fuck were we going to talk about for the last 2 months?
Yeah. I also want to thank the lockout for saving us from having to talk about the Clone Wars cartoon every single week for the next 50 weeks.
How rude.
Which we should probably get this out of the way now. We're not going to keep watching that until after the season at this point. There's just too much baseball on. Sorry, Star Wars fans.
Quinn, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Bubak.
Listen, I think it was Thursday's episode or Thursday's program of Michael K. A lot of callers on there going, I'm not going to go to games for a while. I'm not going to buy any, I'm not going to buy jerseys because, I'm going to boycott against the owner. Fuck, shut the fuck up. God damn it. We got a lot of fucking whiny motherfuckers in this, what we call fan base of the greatest game in the world. And God, it annoys the living shit out of me. I'm whining about that. I'm not going to buy any new jerseys for a while. Shut the fuck up. But hey, I'm excited. We got baseball back. I got a sicko, my sicko fantasy baseball league. That draft is coming up, so that's exciting.
Approximately 10 hours later.
Oh my God, I hate being this dude. I hate being the guy that calls twice, but I just saw from the Associated Press a golden gem in the labor agreement that says that in the All-Star game, if the game is tied after 9 innings, instead of going to extra innings, the game will be decided by a fucking home run derby between the two teams. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I highly doubt it. How fucking awesome is that? Like, come on, let's fucking go. Instead of having to sit through fucking, you know, extra innings sucks. Everybody knows that. Why don't we just make that we'll do it in the All-Star game. Everybody's going to be rooting for a tie so we can watch this badassery. And then 2023, we'll just put it in that, no more boring extra innings. And every game will be decided by a home run derby that's tied after 9, right? Let's fucking go. Love you guys. Nighty-night. Bubak out.
Bubak, I, for one, am fucking psyched about this All-Star game change because, first of all, the All-Star game is a fake game. It's an exhibition game. They don't play all the extra innings anyway. A few years ago, a game ended in a tie, so that officially becomes a what the fuck was the point of watching this thing for the last 3 hours. And the home run derby is inarguably the best part of the entire All-Star weekend, so might as well do a mini one during the game.
I'll take it one step further. If you win the home run derby and you're not on the All-Star team, you should be allowed to sit on the bench for your league's All-Star team just in case it winds up being a tie, and then you get to go to bat to try and win it for them.
I think that's a pretty good idea. They're just fucking exhausted. They can't even swing.
They got nothing left.
Bubak, thanks so much for calling. Our next call is from Nick.
Isaiah, Connor, Falefa, and Josh Donaldson. And some guy with massive biceps. I like it and hate it, right? I really want to call Scoria. So once we get Isaiah, that's dead. Losing Gio's defense sucks. But as Emily is right, as she's the new president of the Josh Donaldson fan club, Josh Donaldson is overall better than Gio Urshela. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I guess, is cool. And Rorvert, or however the hell his name is, I guess that's better defense. So how do you guys feel about the trade? I'm sure John, you know, I'm sure you didn't like or hate Matt Olson, but now with him going to Atlanta, now you have to hate him, right? But you also get Freddie Freeman out of Atlanta. So I guess that's good, right? He'll probably go to LA. And lately we've been talking about Harry Potter, and this I'm sure would make John thrilled. But now we got a little bit of a Harry Potter moment right here for John. Remember, I think it was in Goblet of Fire where Cedric Diggory just died, and you hear Harry Potter saying, "He's back, he's back. Lord Voldemort is back." So now, and maybe DJ can get creative with the voiceover, maybe John could do something too. He's back. He's back. Tom Brady is back. John, how do you feel about the GOAT coming back for another season in the National Football League?
Man, I talked to everybody that I know that cares about football and talked about how relieved I was that Brady was out of the league. I wouldn't have to see him anymore, even though he's not in the Patriots. Dude lasted 2 months in retirement. 2 months! The lockout was longer than that. Now he's back with the Bucks, and I hope he loses. I hope he loses. He got the one. No more. No more. He's fucking done. I hope that this blows up in his face. I hope that they come in last place. What is that in the play, Haters Ball? Like, I wish all the bad things come to you and only you.
I hate you. I hate you. I don't even know you, and I hate your guts. I hope all the bad things in life happen to you and nobody else but you.
I saw a hilarious tweet after he unretired that was like, Tom Brady would rather get run over by a 300-pound linebacker than spend more time with his kids, and that's all I need to know about having kids.
My favorite was they had Tom Brady after spending 2 months with his wife and kids, and then it's Will Arnett from Arrested Development.
I've made a huge mistake.
Nick, thank you so much for your call. Our next call is from Tim.
Hey, guys. Been a while since I called. This is actually Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's car. Where am I supposed to go? Thanks. Have a great week.
Tim, I'm so glad you called with this joke because I totally forgot about that. So what he's referring to is Kiner-Falefa, his car was being shipped to Arizona after being traded to the Twins for their spring training, but then he got traded like a day later to the Yankees, so it was supposed to be en route to Tampa, but he like couldn't find it. He couldn't track it down. So fingers crossed that he got it by now.
And that, let's be fair, is a comedic gift from the lockout, because normally that shit would have happened in like January and we would all sort it out way ahead of time.
Tim, thank you for your call. Our next call is from James.
Emily, John, glad that baseball's back. Two quick questions. Emily, with now the Blue Jays guy getting Matt Chapman and the Yankees pretty much getting Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, a catcher and nobody, ultimate point scorer, and Josh Donaldson, are Yankees a third or second place team? And John, who's winning the NL East? Because the Braves with Matt Olson, they still a team to beat.
You know, it's up in the air at this point. I think that I'd like to see where Freddie Freeman lands, since he's rumored to go to the Rays. I think right now they're firmly a second or third place team. They're firmly a non-firm committal response for me. I really don't know. I mean, the Red Sox were in the mix and then Chris Sale got hurt, so he's starting the season on the IL, so they're kind of out for now. I'm going to give all the confidence in the world. I'm going to go the Yankees are a second place team.
Do you listen to yourself when you talk?
No.
All the confidence in the world, the Yankees are a second place team. Sorry, that was just funny.
We're assuming that the Blue Jays are going to take the division, which I think is also a generous assessment.
Fair.
We'll see if that happens too. There's a lot of games to be played.
James, I agree with your essential sentiment, which is that it's going to come down to the Mets and the Braves. Of course, I think the Mets are going to do it. I think, you know, the Braves got the offense, but even after adding Colin McHugh, we got the pitching. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I know that this is the Braves, you know, defending world champ season, but, and maybe this is even a little bit of a Mets homer in me, being that I'm from New York and you are my cousin and co-host, but I feel like this is the Mets division to lose this year.
I got that feeling too. I really do. But I'm trying to be objective, but yeah, it's the Mets.
James, thank you so much for your call. And thank you to all of our callers. You guys are awesome. Can't wait for a whole season of these phone calls. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. And speaking of our outlook for the season, so we're fucking psyched over here. And we figured, you know what? Let's just do the damn thing. Let's do our top six things that we are most excited for this season. So, John, do you want to kick us off with your number six?
All right. So, my number six, I'm looking forward to these built-in doubleheaders into the season. I know not everybody shares this opinion. That's okay. I love doubleheaders, especially single admission doubleheaders. Going to them is the best. At least for the Mets schedule, we got two of them already as part of making it up. One single admission, one separate admission doubleheader. But I love that. You know, we always wind up with a few because there's rain delays in April and May, whatever. We're going into the season, and I'm already looking at the calendar. Whatever that Tuesday is in early May, like, I am at the ballpark at 3:10 for two games. Two nine-inning games, I should add. Let's fucking go.
The number five thing that we are most excited for this season is a full season of Gallo and Anthony Rizzo. I know I had a few negative things to say about Rizzo earlier in the episode, but he's a Yankee. He's going to be a Yankee for the next 2 years. And one thing that he and Gallo were robbed of last year was not playing a full season in pinstripes. So I'm really excited to see what they both can do. And I'm hoping for good things, especially from Gallo.
All right. The number four thing that we're looking forward to is Keith Hernandez getting his number retired by the Mets. It is long past time. I'm glad that the Mets are finally making these moves to retire some numbers. We don't have to go as crazy as the Yankees did. But, you know, it's finally, we're celebrating our history, and I'm all about that. And especially, and this is no disrespect to Kuzman, who got in last year, but Keith is still a very, very active member of the Mets community as an announcer. He's apparently down in spring training right now as a guest instructor. Like, he is still intimately involved with the organization. So to see him get that number 17 up on top of Citi Field, it's going to be a beautiful thing. I'm hoping to go to the game and the ceremony, but it's well deserved, and it's, again, I love seeing the Mets finally doing it, and who better than Keith?
The number three thing that we are most stoked for is, now I feel this way about the whole team, but in particularly Gerrit Cole. This is like the first full season after a full season that he's been on the team, because he was signed in December 2019. They had the shortened 2020. Last year's season was kind of weird because of not playing a full 162 the year previous. So I'm really excited to see him fully stretched out as a part of this team and the ace of the staff. Severino is back. I'm really fucking stoked to see what he's done and what he can bring to the table. And the Yankees' strength is, I mean, they have a ton of guys in the lineup, but their strength is their pitching. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that pitching carry this team, hopefully to something further than game 163 like we saw last year.
Well, that's a fantastic segue, Emily, because the number two thing that we're looking forward to is, in one sense, the Jacob deGrom redemption tour, but in a larger sense, having deGrom and Scherzer as the 1-2 punch on top of a lineup. Just especially just like, you know, having teams come in, going on the road, and just opening with those two? Are you kidding me?
Insane.
Oh, I can't wait. Cannot wait.
And the number one thing that we are most stoked for this season, Hall of Fame induction weekend up in Cooperstown. Me, John, DJ Bingington, Breaking Balls is going on the road. We're going to see Big Poppy inducted. We're going to see Gil Hodges, Met Great, inducted. And it's going to be a fucking awesome weekend. We already booked our hotel. So anyone listening, if you can get up there that weekend, do it. It's one of the best weekends for baseball fans. Everywhere you go, people just want to talk about baseball 24/7. It's like being in a dream for a baseball fan, literally.
It's your best opportunity to buy us drinks and us to accept those drinks that you bought us.
That about wraps it up for Breaking Balls this week. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. And of course, our callers. You guys are amazing. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ Bingington. And we will catch you guys next week.